You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
People say I am the best boss.
You can find us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio and call in at 1-800-777-2907. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, we covered a lot of landscape of the NFL in hour one.
Boy, they're the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, no doubt. And we'll get a chance to visit with Jackie Slater, the Hall of Fame offensive lineman from the Rams, later this hour at 25 after the hour.
So excited to talk to him.
But I want to dive deeply into some college football with you. It was Cupcake Week.
It was Cupcake Week. I'll give it to you.
A lot of one-sided monster victories by teams like Alabama, winning big. But what game stood out to you?
It has to be OU Kansas. And it's not for what happened on the field. Well, there actually was a little bit that happened on the field. But it was basically, I think we need to dive deeper into that.
Okay, we'll get to what happened with Baker Mayfield and the Kansas guys and all the trash talking.
That's what we're talking about. You know,
that is the wrong topic, but it has surfaced really because of what took place, and Mayfield has drawn that kind of attention to himself.
I mean, when you have an OU at 10-1 playing a Kansas at 1-10, the actual football should not be any topic of conversation. So there we go.
Now, out west, there was a notable game.
Yes, there was. Rivalry week.
The Chosen Rosen versus Sam Darnold, the matchup everybody wanted to see.
Which was an NFL scout's dream, right?
No doubt.
And, you know, I'm a USC Trojan. I'm just going to go ahead and admit it. And Rosen won that battle that night. He did not win the game. He lost the game, and he lost his head coach.
But you're the quarterback picker. We've already noted in hour one, you did not want Kaiser. You wanted Watson. Mm-hmm. You like Rosen or Darnold better as an NFL prospect?
If they both come out this year, I would take Rosen. Darnold should not come out this year. He needs another year. You know, he was not the starting quarterback last year for USC. He came in three games in, so he didn't have a complete season. He just doesn't have a lot of Division I big time college football under his belt. And while I think he is going to be outstanding in the NFL, he needs some polishing. He needs some more experience. He needs to see more of these Pac-12 defenses. They have pretty tough out of conference schedule. He needs to see some adversity. He's got some cleaning up to do.
So Darnold, maybe another year would serve him well. Baker Mayfield will be coming out, and so we'll look at what his draft
pot coming out, and he's not doing it quietly.
We shall dive deeply there with David and Carla, the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
OU and Kansas, a team with a 10-1 record and a team with a 1-10 record. This game was a cupcake game.
41-3 was the final score.
Well, we shouldn't even be talking about it.
It shouldn't deserve any airtime.
Yet here it is. And just to reset, if somebody's missed it, at the beginning of the game, Baker Mayfield went out on behalf of Oklahoma for the pregame toss, and the opposing players from Kansas would not shake his hand.
Neither would the two little girls that were standing there midfield. I mean, they got the message out.
They said, do not shake that man's hand.
Throw some shade at that quarterback there.
So not a great picture of sportsmanship to start the game on the side of Kansas.
No, that was not good.
And then during the course of the game, Mayfield's shouting to Kansas fans, stick to basketball, which, of course, Kansas does well. They don't do football very well. And then later, a Kansas player took a cheap shot, frankly. Most people would say it was a cheap shot on Mayfield on the field.
I would agree with that.
Hit him in the head. And so Mayfield took a tough hit in the course of the game. And that led to the moment that everyone's talking about. Well, Baker Mayfield throws a touchdown pass, Oklahoma pulls away, and then on the sidelines, Baker Mayfield grabs his crotch, makes an obscene gesture, and shouts out F-bombs to the Kansas sideline. Wow, what a day.
What a day. Aren't we proud? Goodness.
Did it have to come to this?
No, it doesn't have to come to this. This is what, here's what my issue is, okay? Baker Mayfield is an incredibly talented quarterback.
I think he's
the Heisman front runner.
He's electric. I love watching Baker Mayfield play.
You really do. And you have loved him all season long. You really have.
He was my pick for the Heisman at the beginning of the year.
Did you say he was? Are you changing your mind?
He's still going to win. He's still going to win.
He is the front runner. And here's what all these little antics right here, just alone in the is it the Canvas game or the Kansas game? I don't know what I'm saying here. You know, to me, I think OU is the front running program. Baker Mayfield is the front runner for the Heisman. Is this how you handle winning? Is this how you handle being a front runner in college football's most prestigious award? Because this isn't, you know, he came out and he has apologized, and Lincoln Riley, head coach at OU, has done the right thing, and he is not starting Baker Mayfield Saturday against West Virginia. What's interesting about that, this is no regular game. This is the last home game for OU. It is a senior game, and Mayfield is a captain. So he very tearfully, in a press conference, had to take this. You know, he took it like a man. I will say that. He did. But it shouldn't need to come to this. Do you agree?
Well, I agree. It shouldn't have come to this. Mayfield's done this to himself. Mm. But I think, actually, the best path forward for him is this kind of discipline, that he would see a consequence for his action. This is a guy who needs to be more mature, who needs to have more poise, more composure in the midst of competition. And hopefully this will be an eye-opener, a chance to grow.
And it wasn't like this was a big rivalry game and a tight game coming down to the wire and determines Big 12, you know, if you got a title berth, which they did earn. But, I mean, it was 41-3, and Kansas has won one game all season. So it worries me that this is how a kid who is really talented handles winning. How is he going to handle losing? Because he's got this, and this isn't a one-off. So just in 2017 alone, let's go roll the calendar back to February.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he's had to apologize four times publicly this season, since February. So he was in Arkansas. I don't know what he was doing there, but he was arrested and charged with public intoxication, disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and fleeing the scene. There you go, in a bar fight. Then he issued a public apology on Twitter. Then, beginning of the season, when OU beat Ohio State in Columbus, 31-16 win, he planted the OU flag very aggressively in the middle of Buckeyes Field, had to issue an apology then. Do you think he would learn? I don't know. 2 weeks later at Baylor. Baylor, who has not won a single game by the time they were facing Oklahoma. And he yells to them during warmups, "You forgot who Daddy is. I'm going to spank you today." Then we go to the Kansas game. And both, you look at Baylor and Kansas, these are not threats to Oklahoma by any stretch of the imagination. This kid, it just gives me cause for pause. He needs to be reined in. And I just think, I don't know, is this what the Heisman ideal? Is this what the Heisman's going to say? Because I bet he is going to win it. I bet you're absolutely right. And I don't know if I want that, you know, portrait up in the New York Athletic Club and the trophy with his name on it when this is what he does?
Well, it is interesting. One of the narratives on him is that anger is his primary motivation, that he plays better when he's angry. And the Kansas team sort of, well, they tugged on Superman's cape here, right?
They poked the bear.
They poked him. They did not shake his hand, so they got him angry. And then sure enough, he went out and played with that feistiness that he does, mm-hmm. that extra energy that he carries with him. And he played a very good game. So I don't know. That kind of motivation, that kind of mentality, I don't think is typical of quarterbacks at the NFL level. I worry if I were looking at him as a prospect for the NFL that he doesn't have the poise, the composure to play at the highest level.
Well, you bring up a great point, because if you just look at the Monday Night Football matchup tonight, Russell Wilson versus Matt Ryan, these are two class act, steely-nerved, put the team on my back, I got you. You would never see these kind of antics. Now, they are men, and this is, I'm going to say, a boy or a very young man, you know, who has a lot to learn. But you're right. You would never, Tom Brady never did this in college. You don't see Aaron Rodgers doing things like this. You know, you can get a competitive fire. But playing from anger, you're right. That's not, I don't know that that's a good formula going forward.
Well, when you look across the history of the NFL, the top quarterbacks have ever played, most of them have a certain poise about them that you don't see from Baker Mayfield. And you can go down the list from Montana to Brady mm-hmm. to Manning to so on. They're very, very focused. They're dialed in on the task at hand. They wouldn't be yelling up at fans in the middle of a game.
No, they wouldn't even see a fan in the middle of the game. Their focus is what's going on the field, period. And you're right. You know, you kind of see these steely-nerved, like they're not emotional. They're very, they might be on the sideline with their teammates. But no, you're right. They've got, the team needs to ride their back, not grab their crotch.
So I think there are two things here if we look ahead. NFL teams, as they're looking, and many people think Mayfield's going to go in the top 15 picks.
Sure.
Will this sort of behavior slow them down on the field? And then how will they feel about that kind of behavior and making him the face of a franchise? I mean, marketing is a part of the NFL narrative.
Jameis Winston is your example to look at, your most recent example. You know, obviously we talked about it earlier in the show, a lot of off-field issues going into the draft. This was known. And what's happening with him now, he's doing things like what he did against Marshawn Lattimore the other day. You know, Winston's on the sideline, and during the game, he's poking him in the back of the head.
You don't see a quarterback do that often.
No. And a quarterback that's not even involved in the game. You know, you saw Jameis Winston pregame huddle where he's licking his fingers. I mean, confusing his teammates instead of firing them up. So
what was confusing about that? He just ate his fingers back so they shaped a W. They were going to win. That was all it was. Oh, wow. Everyone else was confused.
It looked like crab legs.
All right, but I just, before we break on this, I want to look at the Kansas side of this. These players went out and they did not shake a hand, which is common protocol at the coin toss. And their head coach, David Beatty, really gave their players license to say, oh, well, that's just football. That's the way it is. And I don't think that has to be the way it is. In fact, I might say that's just a lowering of standards of sportsmanship. Those Kansas players, and David Beatty should have called them out for it, should go out on the field at the coin toss and shake the hand of the opposing team.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely.
But he gave them license to just, oh, that's just football. That's just boys playing a game.
And he also said, we wanted to send a message to Oklahoma that we are not going to take this. We were, you know, having won one game and facing a team that's probably going to make the college football playoffs. That was the way he sent his message. That was ridiculous. I loved what you said, pulling on Superman's cape. That's exactly what they did. I mean, that is just absolutely foolish.
Yeah, one, I don't think it's good strategy. Two, it's bad sportsmanship. And then their head coach basically affirmed it.
Right, and maybe that's the reason. If it starts there from the top down like that, there's a reason they're 1-10.
I mean, I've heard the question posed, which was more egregious, not shaking Baker Mayfield's hand at the beginning of the game or Baker Mayfield's obscene gesture later in the game?
Ooh, that's tough because one's premeditated and one is impulsive.
Right.
But the impulse is not a good one. What I did think was hilarious, I'm going to have a funny moment about this, is ESPN, if you look up the story, they have kind of screened out the crotch.
All the old like, fuzzy screens.
Yeah,
you can't really see what he's doing down there.
Why? That was just kind of hilarious.
I mean, everyone was fully dressed. You didn't have to cover anything up.
It wasn't an issue, but I thought that was fascinating. That made me laugh. So,
Chris, we don't need you mimicking that behind the glass over there. No obscene gestures here, please.
Chris,
I thought it was a one-way mirror. I'm sorry. I thought I was like John Cena back here. You can't see me. My apologies to the boss.
Shut him down right now.
All right. I know.
And keep the language clean. All right, when we back, we're going to shift back to the NFL because we have a real treat. We're going to be joined by Jackie Slater. He is a Hall of Fame offensive lineman from the Rams. Jackie Slater joins us in the next segment on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now is a 7-time Pro Bowler from the NFL and a member of the Hall of Fame class of 2001. This is Jackie Slater, the great offensive lineman of the Rams. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be able to join you guys.
Well, Jackie, let's start with your former team. The Rams are really off to a great start. I think it surprised many people. Did you see this coming?
Absolutely not. I was just floored to see the start they got off to. I watched them a little bit in training camp and in the spring, and I just didn't see signs of some of the spectacular efforts that I'm seeing by individuals or the collective efforts as a team. Coach McVay has done a great job with this team.
He really has, Jackie. You're so right. In talking about the Rams, you played your entire career with the Rams, 19 in L.A. and 1 in St. Louis. What toll do you think, if any, does moving cities have on the players, the team, the franchise, like what the Rams did, the Chargers, and now Oakland in this purgatory between Oakland and Las Vegas?
Oh, it has a tremendous effect on the players. They have to, many of them, you know, find new places to live. Many of them have to find new schools for their kids. They have to sell homes, sell apartments, condos, and all of that, have furniture shipped and get to new schools and have clothing and get and household things shipped. This is a major ordeal, and I think a lot of people, you know, take it for granted, except for those, you know, who have recently moved or had to move their families. But it's not easy. I mean, and then you have to come to a new climate and get acclimated mm-hmm. to that. You know, the weather is obviously different. I remember when I went to St. Louis, I had allergies, and they were flaring up like I've never had in my life before. And so there are all kind of little different things that everybody has to get adjusted to. And that includes the fan base as well.
That's what I was going to say. How does the fan – that's got to be tough because the fans you're leaving feel betrayed. And the fans you're coming to, well, hopefully they're embracing you.
Well, you know, if you come and do like the Rams did last year, they don't embrace you very well. Last year they had a miserable season, as you know, and it was very difficult to get, you know, to get over that for a lot of people. In fact, a lot of people still haven't come back to the games as well as they're playing. But in time, with the efforts that they're putting forward and the stage that they're becoming accustomed to, which is the big stage, you know, they're getting their games flexed to more nationally televised audience, and if they continue to play well with the stars that they have, they've got stars in all the key spots, the running back, the quarterback, the defensive line, the secondary, the linebackers, they've got stars everywhere. And so if these guys can just continue to play well and continue to do what the special players do at their positions, then they're going to be a very big ticket and a very big draw. I was just told by the Rams that I couldn't have my four seats to the Hall of Fame, to the game this weekend because I didn't ask for them in time. And I played with them for 20 years and I'm in the Hall of Fame. So that tells you what kind of a draw, you know, they are.
The Rams are a big draw. We are talking to Jackie Slater, Hall of Fame offensive lineman with the Rams. Now, your son, Matthew, is a player on the Patriots. I've been there since 2008, special teams captain. All these years, the Patriots have had some kind of secret sauce. They've defied the natural parity in the league. You got some insight there with your son. How are the Patriots pulling this off?
Well, first of all, let me say this, go on record as saying this. They have as quiet a community about what they're doing as anybody in the mm-hmm. country. In fact, I began to ask my son these questions, and he'll say, Dad, I got to go. I got to go. Just doesn't divulge very much, but just as an outsider looking in, it seems to me that all the players that they keep and the ones that are making the major contributions are guys who have bought into the discipline that he expects, to the professionalism he expects. They're smart enough to handle the skills, which is varied on both sides of the ball. They're smart enough to handle it, and they're obviously smart enough to see that this is an environment where you have to be all in, or you're probably going to be gone.
That's a great point, and it works for them. So, Jackie, in this current NFL 2017, we're really seeing how critical the offensive line play is for these teams, and we're seeing a lot of bad O-line play in the Giants, Arizona, Houston, Seattle, Cincinnati, among several. What do you think is attributing as a former, you know, set Pro Bowl Hall of Famer lineman, what's contributing to this lack of protection in the offensive line?
Well, it's funny that you would notice that, and I do agree with you 100%. And it's one of the main reasons why people are buying offensive linemen as soon as they hit the market, because they got to have guys protect the quarterback. In my opinion, I think it's been legislated out of the game, all of the practices and the ability to have contact in practices. Because I really do believe that as a player, as an offensive lineman, a former offensive lineman, if I had not been given the opportunity to practice my skill every day and practice against Jack Youngblood and people like him, Cody Jones and guys like that, then I wouldn't have shown up well against Reggie White and different people, Tutal Jones and guys like that, Gastineau around the league. You have to practice the skill of playing football if you're an offensive lineman. You can't just go through the motion and expect to be physical with the attitude of dominance that you have to have, because you're not going to dominate anybody, but you have to try. And if you're trying to dominate, then that's a good opportunity that you got to play par football with these people. So I think legislating some of the contact out of practice has been a very, very big downfall of the offensive line play.
We are talking to Jackie Slater, Hall of Fame offensive lineman from the Rams. So, Jackie, looking around the league, who are the two or three linemen that stand out to you at the top of their game?
Well, I mean, you know, Jason Peters at the Philadelphia Eagles is one of the best in the business. Tyron Smith at the Dallas Cowboys is another one of the very, very special talents that's in there. Both these guys are playing at the top. Joe Thomas is at the top of his game. As offensive tackles, those are the top in the business. There's some other guys in that next tier that are doing well and servicing their team well. We just saw it this past weekend with Riley Reiff of the Minnesota Vikings. You know, that offensive line coach over there in Minnesota has done a fantastic job. He's got five brand-new starters, and, you know, they average about 5.6 years of experience. And they're problem solvers, but they've got some really good – Tony Sperano, you remember him. He's the offensive line coach, and he's doing a fantastic job with that group over there. So I like to see good team offensive line play where the group is functioning well. And I think, you know, the Rams group has functioned well. But when I look at Minnesota, when I look at Dallas, when I look at Philadelphia, these guys are there. They're the top shelf teams.
Well, Jackie, you played alongside legendary Walter Payton at Jackson State. What did you learn from him?
Well, I think the biggest thing I learned from Walter was a tenacity that you have to play this game with. It doesn't matter what position you play. If you're going to play a game of football, you got to be all in physically, and you got to practice the game the way you want to play it. If you want to play at a high level against very good competition on any given Sunday, you have to practice against the top-level talent on your team and try to beat them in practice. And so Walter was a guy that never missed a practice. He had, I remember one year he had a calcium deposit on his left arm. They had to drain 60 cc's of fluid from it, and he never missed a practice. And we tackled him in practice. We even sacked our quarterbacks in certain drills. So the way he went about his business on a daily basis made you look at him, regardless of the position you play, and say, man, if I can play my position at the intensity that he's doing his, I'd be a much better ball player. So that's what I learned from Walter.
Those are the words of a Hall of Famer, Jackie Slater. Thank you so much for joining us here on SB Nation Radio.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Thank you guys for having me, and I wish you the very best of luck and great holiday season coming up.
You too, Jackie. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, Carla, one thing that stood out to me is when we talk about offensive line play in the NFL and the decline of offensive line play in the NFL, it actually makes a lot of sense what he says, that they're not practicing the hitting. Think about it. Actually, now, from high school up, there's the advent of 7-on-7 leagues. 7-on-7 is great for quarterbacks and receiver development, but the offensive linemen really get to do nothing.
That's exactly true, and I loved what Jackie said with practice the way that you want to play it. And you're right. That's not happening in 7-on-7 at the high school level, so then you get to the college level, and there's no more two-a-days, and there's less pad practice and this kind of thing. You're not able to practice the way you want to play it. So how, when you get into a real game situation, real-time situation, can you expect to play at a high level?
And, of course, much of that is done in the name of safety. Fewer hits and practices keep everybody healthy, yet it certainly means that the technique development doesn't happen as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, let's be real, it's not a sexy pick to pick up offensive linemen if you've got first-round draft picks. That's not the flash. That's not what people are going to talk about. But it is so integral. And you can see from these teams that don't have it.
Well, and that's a little bit of a chicken and egg. If you are a really good athlete, big, size, ability to move, the contracts are bigger on the defensive side of the ball. So you ought to, as a college player, position yourself on the defensive line of the ball so the better athletes line up on that side, which is another reason that the offensive linemen are struggling.
Well, they need to change that. Because that left tackle, that's protecting the quarterback's blind side. David, you need to make a movement.
All right, we'll see what we can do. When we come back, we're going to get an update on the Monday Night Football game. We'll also have our award-winning segment, the He Said, She Said segment. This is David and Carla on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Monday Night Football underway, and it's a pretty good game, so let's go out to our man on the ground, Kevin Shockey. Kevin, do you have an update for us in Seattle?
Yeah, it was an action-packed start to this one as the Falcons took an early 14-0 lead thanks to a big return on the opening kickoff and a big penalty against Seattle. And Desmond Trufant intercepts Russell Wilson that set Atlanta up with great field position on their second drive. So the first two touchdowns for the Falcons, Tevin Coleman with a rushing touchdown and Matt Ryan found a Ahad Sanu for the second. Seattle's second drive finally got moving when Tyler Lockett had his second big return and Russell Wilson found Jimmy Graham for his seventh touchdown in six games, which gave the seven-point deficit for Seattle. Things looked good for Seattle when they forced a punt by Atlanta on the next drive, but the Falcons sacked Russell Wilson and forced a fumble and returned it for a touchdown, which gave the Falcons a 21-7 lead. Seattle has a field goal added in the second quarter and now is down at the one-yard line with a fourth and one here with 5.5 minutes left here in the second quarter, looking to pull within, they're leading, trailing 21-10, looking to pull within four.
Well, in an exciting moment in the game because it is fourth and goal. Seattle has the ball within the one-yard line of the Falcons. They're going to go for it and try to punch in it for a touchdown instead of a field goal. You like the call?
I like the call.
Seattle trailing 21-10.
They've got to get that Super Bowl bug off their back. They're still working on that.
Don't throw the pass
Malcolm
here.
Butler, don't throw here.
There's no Malcolm Butler playing for the Falcons today. Interestingly, these are the two teams that fell to the Patriots in inauspicious fashion in the Super Bowl.
No kidding, but I like this kicking and screaming and scratching and crawling for identity tonight. It's going to be a good one. I'm really enjoying this.
So this is the moment we've all been waiting for, the highly acclaimed award-winning segment, the He Said, She Said segment.
What did you just say? What the hell?
It's time for He Said, She Said on The Boss and the Gloss.
So this is the feature when we look at what sports luminaries have said during the course of the week, things that have been said that were notable, worth remembering. And the first one we're going to pull up is Steve Kerr, the great standout coach of the Golden State Warriors. He was asked about the running dialogue in the media between LeVar Ball and Donald Trump. Let's listen to what Steve Kerr had to say, maybe a voice of sanity in the midst of all this chaos between Ball and Trump.
You know, it would help if all of you just stopped covering both of them. Is that possible? You could probably stop covering LeVar. I don't think you can stop covering the president. I don't think that'll work.
He might be.
It would be nice for all of us if both of them would just be quiet. Wouldn't that be great?
Bam. He hit the nail on the head. And here we are talking about him.
They got us.
These two are like middle school frenemies. This is just, it's actually insanity. Both of them, you know, they're evil twins, I have decided.
Separated at birth.
Both LeVar Ball and our POTUS make outrageous statements to make sure that they stay in the spotlight. They both have appeared on TV reality shows. The Ball family has their own now. And then, of course, The Apprentice. They both have appeared in WWE matches. That is true. And they're both very polarizing figures. And they both can provoke really strong reactions.
Well, just a step back.
I don't find anything redeeming there, do you?
No, it's just bizarre. You almost have two masters at publicity, two masters at garnering attention, and they've almost united forces in a common cause to create more publicity for themselves. Now, look, seemingly they're at odds with one another. I mean, Trump is saying that, well, Ball isn't grateful for getting his kid out of jail.
Trump made a call to the president of China to get LeVar's sunglass-stealing kid and his two teammates that did the same out of a communist country. They were left behind. Do you think a little gratitude would be in order?
Well, LeVar is going to offer none, is he? He's going to actually say his kid didn't need it in the first place.
And he's going to say, who? When they said, aren't you going to thank Trump? Who?
Amazing. But see, then Trump comes back and says, maybe I should have left them behind. Maybe they should spend the next 10 years in jail after all. So though they seem at odds, though they're fighting with one another, they're actually united in a common cause for increasing the pie of publicity between themselves.
The only contest is whose ego is bigger between those two. My goodness.
Well, they are good at what they do.
And the funny thing is, we're talking about the dad of some AAU kids and now the second round pick with the Lakers. And the president of the United States.
They found each other.
found each other.
What an odd couple.
But I do agree with Steve Kerr. If we don't give a microphone to LeVar, we don't have to hear it. In the tweets, you know, Trump will do what he needs to do.
All right. That's the opening salvo of the he said, she said. In this case, it was Ball versus Trump.
Let's try next week not to talk about LeVar if we can.
All right. Well, look, here's number two. And this is another good duo, Jerry Jones and Roger Goodell. And this is Jerry Jones, well, many months back when he first learned that Goodell was going to suspend Ezekiel Elliott. Jones said this. He said, I'm coming after you with everything I have. Robert Kraft is a P word compared to what I will do to you. So Jones really laying down the gauntlet. He says he's coming after hard. I mean, Goodell, he will not have it. He would not have Elliott and suspended. And so Jones comes after him pretty hard. Tubbs is flustered at the language that he's using. I mean, no one's comfortable with the P word, but it was pretty harsh language from Jones, who now looks like he's going to end up on the short end of this battle.
Well, what's interesting is that Jerry Jones should be actually aligning with Robert Kraft as being two very influential owners that have gone through similar Deflategate situation, now the suspension. And Robert Kraft's son relayed a message that Jerry Jones had given to Robert Kraft last year during the Deflategate time, which said, I think you should all take your medicine and focus on winning football games. But Jerry didn't take his own medicine when given to him. So he's once again talking out of both sides of his mouth. And it's just, it's a problem. There is no owner that is going to win. No single owner can take on the NFL like Jerry is trying to do.
Well, he can't do it alone. And he's tried to build sort of a following amongst mm-hmm. the owners. I think he's out on an island. It doesn't look like anyone's rallying to his cause. Certainly no one has come out publicly and said, I understand where Jerry Jones is coming. I want to slow down the compensation process for Roger Goodell. I mean, look, now the battlefront is, should the NFL renew Roger Goodell?
It was already decided in May.
And basically in May was voted that they want to renew him, but the terms were not there. There's still 18 months left on the existing contract, so there's no real rush. The interesting thing to me is, clearly, Jones was supportive in May. He's not supportive today. So Elliott's the suspension of Elliott is clearly the tipping point. That's mm-hmm. what's turned Jones and created all of this angst.
Mm-hmm. What I love, USA Today sports columnist Nancy Armour said the best thing. I think this sums it up beautifully. Jerry Jones is badly overplaying his hand with efforts to upend Roger Goodell's contract extension as payback for Zeke's suspension.
Mm-hmm.
Bam, that's it.
Right.
That's it in a nutshell. And what he's trying to do in getting, you know, the owners to try and turn against Roger Goodell, get a quorum for that, it's having the exact opposite effect. And they're going ahead with the contract extension and saying it's going to get done.
Right.
I mean, you know, he's really ticked off Arthur Blank, who's the head of the Falcons owner, head of the compensation committee. It's doing exactly the opposite of what Jerry Jones is trying to do.
Right. At this moment, the owners almost seem to be rallying behind the idea that they need to get this extension done, if for no other reason than the distraction will go away and they can move forward.
And all owners, let's be real about this. There are 32 owners. All of them have equal voice. And we kind of talked about this a little bit before the show, that some can choose to be more involved than others, but they're not necessarily picked in that way. I'm going to sneeze. No, I'm not. Okay, good. Whew. Those are crazy. That kind of
her nose started to wrinkle. Her eyes were watering. She thought about sneezing.
It was the P word. You've upset me.
Well, no, Chris Tubbs, it's all his fault. The P word should never come out on radio.
I didn't want to have to get a sound effect ready.
Exactly.
That's all I'm saying.
You didn't need a beep machine going?
No, especially.
You know how David is. We always have to rein him in.
Well, he's the boss. He can do what he wants.
Very true.
Although others might say otherwise. I'm ready if need be, but I have confidence that you guys, we got 11 minutes left. I have a feeling
we can do it.
You can finish strong. I believe in you guys.
But there is a 7-second delay. So if any negative or bad words get out, Tubbs can clean it up.
Well, now, as of last week,
I
have my new $50 million contract. I am not going to take that lightly.
Goodness.
I'm going to behave.
The one thing that's coming out of this, Goodell is going to get paid very, very well.
Yes.
The rumors last week, the reports, $50 million, lifetime use of a jet. You were willing to take that deal and become the new NFL commissioner.
And while I think you brought up a great point last week about he doesn't really seem to lead. What he does do, and I'm going to repeat it again, is just make boatloads of money for the NFL. And while there are issues like there have never been before with the anthem, with losing fan support, you know, ratings are going down. He signed, Goodell, in his tenure in 2011, signed a 9-year deal with the NFL and Fox, CBS, and NBC for a total of $27 billion. That's billion with a B. $3 billion each year for 9 years. And his goal by 2027 is for the NFL to be making $25 billion. They're currently making about $14 billion. So sponsorships are part of the revenues for the NFL as well as ticket sales. But really, it's this TV revenue that is the lion's share, and that is all on him. So the owners, you know, while he works for the owners, he certainly made them pretty darn happy as far as their compensation.
It was all fun and games until it got nasty.
Exactly. But before my sneeze, the point I was making is that I think what Arthur Blank and several other members, Bob McNair, owners that are on the compensation committee, what they're trying to tell Jones is that, hey, you have the same 1/32nd of a vote as voice as all of us do. So we're not letting one guy try and move the ship.
All right. That is Jerry Jones and his infamous quote of the week. We've got one more for the He Said, She Said segment. This is the great legendary coach, Nick Saban.
Talking some very serious stuff.
Talking about serious stuff. He actually is rarely good-humored and joking as he was in this press conference. Let's hear what he had to say at the press conference about fashion.
I guess I just wanted to know how we got here. Not to offend anybody out there, but I just walked by some wore-out jeans, holes in them, all cut up. I just remember when I was a kid in West Virginia, I was ashamed to go to school because my jeans were wore out, only because we didn't have any better. Now they buy them that way. I just can't figure out how we get here. I don't know.
Well, a comical moment, but it seemed funnier to Nick Saban than just about anyone else in the room.
Well, it was kind of crickets after he said it, and some nervous laughter by just a few. And then when Nick Saban actually had to laugh himself, then they kind of got the cue card that, oh, shoot, media is supposed to be laughing.
Now, listen, I'm going to laugh at it. I liked his sense of humor on this one. He's got a good point. And I know you may be a sensitive topic to you. Here you sit with holes in your jeans, and they're all worn out. They look great, by the way. But this is the style, the new era jean that Nick Saban's addressing.
I just don't have the violin out for poor Nick Saban growing up in West Virginia with holes in his jeans because they were worn down. He's the highest paid coach, you know, in college football. And it just kind of makes me laugh. It's very interesting. But I guess he does not feel the stress of beating Mississippi State, then turning around and putting a 56-0 beat down on Mercer. I guess he's got some stress lifted, and we just saw some Saban humor.
Yeah, it was a bit of a relaxed weekend, but he's got an Iron Bowl game coming up that's going to be one for the ages. Those are two really good teams and
a
great matchup
fantastic.
With huge consequences for the whole season.
And Auburn has they have what it takes. They could upend Alabama.
They do. I think it's a good game. It's an evenly matched game, and it's going to be exciting to watch.
I love this part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tonight, Monday Night Football, this is an important game. College football, it's really getting down to the wire, so I love it. This is fun.
21-17, the score now, Monday Night Football. Seahawks trailing the Falcons. And when we come back, we'll wrap up what we know about Monday Night Football and any other, well, we'll empty out the notebook. Final topics on The Boss and the Gloss of SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
We covered a lot of ground tonight.
Oh my gosh. God bless the NFL and
yes.
Baker Mayfield. They get a lot of...
Baker Mayfield fed us big time.
He did.
I'll tell you what, though. It was great to interview Dak Prescott.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
that
my goodness,
great.
What a great young man.
And clearly a leader.
And Jackie Slater, a leader from yesteryear, Hall of Fame offensive lineman of the Rams.
And I loved his just emphasis on consistency and how important that is.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we go, just to empty the notebook... This is really officially the end of the baseball season. All the awards have doled out. I want to give you another shout out because you did pick the two MVP winners from both leagues. You saw Stanton and Altuve as the guys who should win. Altuve, in particular, I believe was your favorite. You're both 5'6" tall, right?
Right. You're both feet, Jose, six? And I, yes, same height.
Okay.
Exactly. And do you know what? There is a foot difference between Altuve and Stanton, 5'6" and 6'6".
Wow. That is a lot.
One complete foot. But here, I've got two fun things for you.
Okay.
And I just want you to know, the $50 million is worth it. See, I'm picking the right people.
Yes.
Baseball MVPs, yes. Quarterbacks. Yes. Just, you know.
Yes.
I'll just throw that in, not even in my job description, for my great salary from you. So Jose Altuve had more hits, home runs, RBIs, stolen bases, better batting average, better OPS than Pete Rose.
Really?
Well, while I don't love Pete Rose, you cannot say anything against his talent. It's,
yeah, no, Charlie Hustle was outstanding.
Outstanding. And Jose Altuve beat him in all those categories, which is fantastic. And well, here's my Giancarlo Stanton fun fact. Okay. He hit nearly 5 miles of home runs in 12 ballparks off 51 different pitchers in 2017.
Wow. Now you're showing off.
Okay. But $50 million makes me show off.
And a fantastic Boss on the Gloss on Monday night, where the Falcons are still leading the Seahawks 21-17. Thanks for being with us on the Boss on the Gloss of SB Nation Radio.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait. You mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said. You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.